We're talking about Ruth. We're talking about singles, how it is we're supposed to find a mate. That's not really what the book's about, but it illustrates. And these Old Testament stories, the New Testament tells us, were written for our example, that we would be instructed by them, and oftentimes that we wouldn't do the same things that those people did. So I think we're rightly, not trying to put anything in the text, but we're gleaning from the text just the basic fact that Ruth happens to be a single woman, although a widow. And Naomi, her mother-in-law, is a single woman, although older. And Boaz, who we saw them cross paths last week in chapter 2, he's a single man. So singleness is all over the pages of this book. So we're going to pick up then in Ruth chapter 2. If you have your Bible, open to Ruth chapter 2. And let's kind of ramp up. Here's how we would ramp up. Clearly, a theme of the book of Ruth is the theme of the providence of God. God has been working and watching and moving since Ruth 1, verse 1. It was God who brought the famine in the land that then drove them, they thought, not to repentance, which they should have done, but drove them to run this family of Elimelech, and Naomi ran to Moab. But God was there even still in grace, being patient, being kind. Even though they were being disobedient, he granted them safe passage to Moab. He granted them acceptance among the Moabites. He gave them food. He gave them friends. He even gave them wives. All of that took place even though they were, in fact, running from God. God was there in his providence in the death of Elimelech, the death then of both of Naomi's sons. God was there in his providence working through the despair of Naomi, the depression of Naomi, and even the bitterness of Naomi. All of that we looked at from chapter 1. But God was also there in providence through grace and through hope. We took a week and just saw that grace has spilled all over this story. But most prominently, as we end chapter 1, there's the grace and the hope that Naomi realizes because there's food again back home in Bethlehem. But as chapter 2 begins, and we began it a week or so ago, maybe 2 weeks ago, it's still a hard life. Even though Ruth and Naomi are back in Bethlehem, things are not easy. They're having to just scrape by. They're having to just live from day to day. And so in Ruth chapter 2 and verse 2, Ruth determines and asks Naomi's permission to go and glean. And we learned last week that's really hard work. Harvesting is hard work, but you're harvesting from full stalks. Now she's gleaning from stalks that have already been stripped. So it's incredibly difficult work. But she determines to go. She asks Naomi's permission. Naomi tells her to go. The best hope is maybe they get a meal. Maybe a meal for a day or two. But we get a glimpse of Ruth's heart. We did that last week. So look with me at verse 2 in your Bibles, Ruth 2, 2. And Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, "Let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after him in whose sight I shall find favor." And Naomi said, "Go." You see, Ruth is looking for favor. And that's the same Old Testament word for grace. What we would read in the New Testament is grace. Here in the Old Testament is translated as favor. She is hoping to find some grace. And more than that, here it says, "In whose sight I shall find favor." The implication is I'm hoping I'll find some man or some farmer or some crop picker that will grant me favor. But we're going to learn this morning very clearly as you read through the rest of this chapter, she knows her favor comes from God. So this is a glimpse of her faith. She is living under the wings of the providence of God. She's a new believer. She came to this realization, it seemed, even as Naomi was getting ready to head back, and she said, "Your God will be my God, your people will be my people." So here's this new believer, single woman, trusting in the grace of God. Now look at verse 3. So she set out and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers, and she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the clan of Elimelech. And behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem, and he said to the reapers, "The Lord be with you." And they answered, "The Lord bless you." Then Boaz said to his young man who was in charge of the reapers, "Whose young woman is this?" And the servant who was in charge of the reapers answered, "She is the young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab." She said, this is the reaper telling Boaz, she said, please let me glean and gather among the sheaves after the reapers. So she came. And she has continued from early morning until now, except for a short rest. Now, singles, listen to me. Let me repeat this. Ruth is simply doing the next thing. That's it. That's her list of how do I get married or how do I find the best for me? How do I find God's best for me? Now, singles, how do you do it? Do the next thing. Do what's right in front of you, and now forget all that. Married people, how do you find God's best for you? How do you go out there and seek God's purpose for you? And the answer is do what's right in front of you. Do the next thing that needs to be done. Do the next thing that clearly God would have you to do. And the things that aren't so clear will become clear. The things that He really wants will become worked out. So she's doing the next thing, which is we've got to eat. And in order to eat, I cannot sit here with an attitude of entitlement as a foreigner in a strange land living with a widowed woman. I've got to go to work. I've got to go out here and hope that I can find grace even through my hard work. Now notice the report to Boaz. She didn't just decide to go to work as an example of, well, at least I did my little part. Look what the servant says about this single woman. She has worked from early morning until now, and she only took one brief break. She is hard at it. And I think about that as almost a juxtaposition to how we might, albeit be pigeonholing a little bit, but it is fair to represent it with a pretty broad stroke. We've got a problem in this country with understanding this kind of thing. Just hard work. Not with the promise of $1 million or a bigger house, but just to meet our daily needs. And I'm really thankful that Nathan took the opportunity this morning to kind of make that point. There's great dignity in this. It is what we do. It is, in fact, what we were created to do. And she seems to have a sense of that, partly drawn around her by her cultural upbringing, which was not Christian, was not godly, was with the Moabites, but now has been immersed into this new culture, and she's working hard work in hot sun almost nonstop, not looking for something for nothing, right? It's not what she's looking for. Not imagining she deserves better than this. There's no hint of that in the text. She doesn't imagine, I shouldn't be here. Why? What's up? I mean, I'm a beautiful woman or whatever. She doesn't seem to have any hint of that. And I think it's because she knows better. She knows she doesn't deserve better. We've seen that in her heart. She is pleased now to find the favor that she was hoping to find. In other words, she is participating and receiving this as a grace from God. And it's amazing how often we have to remind Christians that grace means she didn't deserve it. She's getting more than she deserved. And we're going to see by the end of it, she's going to get more than she even wanted. More than she even wanted. That's a powerful testimony of this young, single woman living in an estranged place. But now we also learned last week that what actually is happening here, in some measure, is happening because it's God's law that it would happen that way. Remember? God established the law, and one of the laws was that if there are poor people among you, if there are strangers in your land, if there are the destitute down and out, then if you're a farm owner, a landowner, don't reap everything, leave some just for the poor people to come and to glean. So we could say that the reaper's response, who said, yeah, you can work here, was just a response to the law. The law of God says I have to give you a job. But I would have to read that into the text, wouldn't I? Because that doesn't seem to be the attitude. So this isn't a grudging obedience to God's law. This is a willing and glad participation in an expression of the character of God that cares for the least among us. And that's what the law is designed to do, to show us the character of God. And it seems that these reapers working for this man Boaz, they get that. And there's not any begrudging going on here. But Ruth clearly knows her heritage. She knows she's a Moabitess. She knows that she is a particularly unwelcome visitor in Bethlehem. These are not friendly peoples with one another. So whatever the law says, she knows that this opportunity is because of an unusual generosity and a kind heart on behalf of these reapers, these harvesters. And you say, well, that seems like such a little thing. Why does God spill all this ink? It seems like maybe about 7-8 verses in a really short book with only 4 chapters to describe the fact that she got a job picking some leftover grain. Why the emphasis, listen, why the emphasis on such little things? Single people, have you lost sight or have you not yet learned the importance of the little things? I read this week. There's a mathematician and a meteorologist. Some of you, I guess, will know this better than me. His name is Edward Lorenz. Edward Lorenz worked on the development of computer models that would map and predict weather patterns. We benefited from his work as we watched this storm predicted and do almost exactly what they predicted it would do. He made a major contribution in what's known as the field of chaos theory. Chaos theory. What he discovered when he ran his data, accumulated data that only powerful computers could now give him the opportunity to do, is this, that inconsequential variations in the initial stages, follow this, of weather development would produce dramatically different results in the end. Little bitty things, little bitty variables early on in a weather pattern could produce a chaotic hurricane. And famously out of his work comes this sort of a metaphor. And it has its a genesis with Edward Lorenz's studies. Here it is. If a butterfly flaps its wings, the effects of that tiny movement of air as it multiplies and expands is what, in fact, he said, produces hurricanes. Now, we might say that metaphor a different way. The tiniest things can have seismic implications. And almost every parent has tried to teach their child that in some way, standing by a still pond with a pebble, right? You toss the pebble in and you tell your kids to watch the ripples and see if they can see where they ever end. Because that tiny little thing can have huge consequences. Now, that's a scientific perspective, but that's precisely what God is teaching us in this chapter. Don't treat this as a little bitty thing that some guy somewhere on a hot day gave a foreign lady the privilege of gleaning. This has seismic implications, not only in Ruth's life, but in the history of God's people and in our own Christian history. Because this has to happen for her to get married and have a child whose lineage will produce David the king and Christ the Messiah. So young people, you say, boy, I'm single. I'm not crazy about being single. Or maybe I'm just out of high school. I don't know what I'm going to do with my life. Do the next thing and concentrate on what? On the little things. Don't miss the little things. You're not going to go from zero to wealthy. It's going to be an accumulation of just little things. All of them, with the right heart attitude, graces from God. Ruth sees that. Ruth sees that. She's aware of that. Now, the long-term implications, she has no clue. But she seems to have been taught and certainly understood that the little things matter. And I just want to say to all of you, this is the great adventure of the Christian life. Everything matters. Everything matters. And we should get that. There are no insignificant details in life. There are no insignificant details in my life. The Christian life, I was taught years ago by my pastor. It seems like he said it every Sunday. He probably said it twice in 6 years, but it sounded like he said it every Sunday. And that is, the Christian life is the most disciplined life of all. Not constrained by the law, but aware of the implications of every little thing in my life. Every little thing matters. When I counsel people who've come to me because their Christian testimony doesn't seem to have worked and their life is chaos, we don't reach out and grab that big ball of chaos and try to make sense of it. We sit down and talk about the little things in their life that are contributing to the chaos that they can't see the connection between. So if you struggle, for instance, with a lack of self-control and you've got addiction problems, right? And so you come and say, how do we fix addictions? We always start to talk about the little areas of self-control. What does your desk look like? What does your bedroom look like? What does your sock drawer look like? What does your car look like? Because you're out of control everywhere. You're not just out of control in one area. And it's those little things. Instead of trying to stop alcoholism, why don't you try to start folding your socks? Well, that just sounds silly to people. But it shouldn't sound silly to Christians. Because we understand nothing's insignificant. And we begin with self-control in these areas where we can exercise self-control and learn the benefits of it. And now your socks match, right? And your wife's not fussing at you because you just drop everything wherever you're standing. And your boss is suddenly more aware of your production because you're just more evidently productive. And suddenly you're learning to gain control over these chaotic issues of your life. Again, I would say that's the great adventure of the Christian life. Nothing's insignificant to us. Nothing. We sometimes think it's just random. Happenstance. This story seems to say that. She just happened by. But we know better, and she'll learn better. And that's how we see the glory of God in it. You see what we do, and single people, I'm kind of focusing on, you know what you do? You try to anticipate what's next. Where am I going to meet that guy? Where am I going to meet that gal? How do I need to look when I get there? And sometimes you get all dressed up, and there ain't no party, right? All those plans, and he didn't show. All those plans, and she wouldn't come to the door. And it's because we're always trying to get ahead. We're always trying to anticipate. And in reality, what we're saying is, we got this. We got this. We can do this. And we can't do this. Only God can do this. And the reality is, we often don't know what to do next because we don't know what to do best. And all of that's just another way for me to simply say what I've said now two or three times over the last 4 weeks. Do the next thing. Do it right. Do it well. Be committed to it. And then trust God. And I think that's where Ruth's example is so useful for us. She and Naomi don't know whether or not they're going to have ends met. They don't. There's no promise of that. It's not just get to the first and we get our new food stamp card. It's none of that. They don't have any long-term survival plan. They've come back to the land, but things weren't any better there really than they were in Moab. Maybe not as good. But this new believer does the next thing. She gets up and says, I got to go to work because we have to eat. I would say this, that's the secret of Christian contentment also. You read the Apostle Paul who says, I have learned to be content. I learned it when I didn't have anything, but I had to learn it again and maybe learn it better when I had everything. But I've learned it. You might say, Paul, how'd you do that? Well, you've got a bio of several years of his life. Watch what he does. He does the next thing. He just does the next thing. He doesn't ever get ahead of himself. In fact, he would caution himself and remind us at times that I got ahead of God. And God said, no, I don't want you to go to Macedonia. I want you to go over here. I don't want you to go there. I want you to go over here. And you just watch him just moving. There's this fluidity to it. And you certainly can see it if you follow the life of Christ. So I would just say to single people, to Christian people, do your duty today. I don't know what your duties are today, but do them. And do them well, and do them with dignity, and do them knowing that God's in it, and that sovereign grace abounds in all of it. It's this kind of dependence that Ruth seems to be manifesting. Now we have to move on. Look at verse 8. Then Boaz said to Ruth, now this is huge, right? Do you remember, ladies, the first time he talked to you? Guys, can you remember the first time she even noticed you were in the room? This is that moment. We're dropping in on that moment between these two that we know ultimately are going to be married. Look what he says now. That's kind of how men begin. Now, what comes next? So maybe he's more articulate than me, but I'm the kind of guy that gets hung up on now, right? Now, blah, 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 blah. Now listen, my daughter. Do not go to glean in another field. Do not leave my field. Keep close to my young women. Let your eyes be on the field that they are reaping. Go after them. Follow them. Have I not charged the young men not to touch you? And when you are thirsty, go to the vessels and drink what the young men have drawn. This is huge. His grace extended to this foreigner probably can't adequately be magnified. We're getting a sense of that watching what's going on in our nation today and how sometimes really far away we are from extending just common courtesies to fellow human beings. But this is beyond that. He says, I want you to understand this isn't just for today. You don't have to get up tomorrow and wonder whether or not somebody will grant you favor. You can come right back here tomorrow. I want you to come right back here. You don't have to look anywhere else. And more than that, I want you to know you've got companionship here. I want you to be integrated in with these young women. Follow them. You're a part of them. Let your eyes fall on that field. Don't look anywhere else. Don't imagine, you might hear him saying, that the grass is greener on the other side. Just focus right here. Follow closely these young women, my servants. And then more than that, look what he says next. You don't have anything to worry about with the men. The women are going to welcome you and the men will not take advantage of you because I have charged them not to. I have warned them not to take the new girl and turn her into an object, not to turn her into somebody they can lord over. I've warned them of that. And then when you're thirsty, and this is bigger than we can imagine, right? We all drink out of the same water fountain. Not in this culture. He says, I want you to drink where we drink. When those men draw that water, you drink out of the same vessel they drink out of. I am inviting you, Ruth, to be a part of who we are. He's not inviting her on a date. He has no aspirations here of that, at least not yet. But I just want you to know, you belong here. You belong here. Now, who is this? This is a foreign lady. This is an immigrant. This is a lady coming from enemy territory. That's who this is. And this is way more than the law required. Way more than the law required. Boaz isn't here moved by some external law that forces a duty. He is expressing the character of God now, not from the law, but the character now birthed in him and pouring out in graciousness to this woman. Ruth is getting way more than she wanted this day. Way more than she wanted. Because God's involved in this. Look at her reaction, verse 10. She fell on her face. She bowed to the ground. And look at what she said. Why? Why have I found favor, grace, in your eyes that you should take notice of me since I'm a foreigner? How powerful is that? How different is that than maybe you and me? Who in a similar situation, though probably never in this kind of a situation, but maybe something similar, where you went out and hoped to get a break. Finally somebody noticed. And you said, well, it's about time somebody noticed. It's about time you recognize me. No, that's not what she said. What does she say? Why would you ever recognize me? Why would you extend favor to me? What is she saying? I don't deserve your attention. Those of you familiar with the Psalms, can you hear David? Who is man that you, God, should be mindful of him? This is Ruth. Who am I, Boaz, that you should be mindful of me? I'm just a foreigner. I'm a stranger. You're asking me to be as though I belong, and clearly I don't belong. Now, ladies, you get that one? Why don't these men notice me? You just answered the question. Because you went out to get noticed. You don't want men to notice that. Why not go out doing the next thing and then be blown over by at the least time when you least expected it to be noticed by God and by, in this case, a servant of God. So ladies, that one's kind of for you. But men, are you listening? Do you get this one? how in our culture we have a tendency to make ourselves look better than we really are and to look for women who look better than they really are. You do know that stuff you see on television, the magazines, they don't look like that. They don't. You can Google it and watch the process. We've got some filmmakers here. They can tell you how to make them make you look way better than you look. But that's what we want. That's what we imagine. We are super experts at pretense. And then you do finally get the courage, guys, to ask a girl out. Then you're going to pretend to be something you're not. You're going to pretend to be something you're not while she pretends to be something she's not. And I'm telling you, that's a problem in dating. One of the greatest weaknesses of dating isn't dating for dating's sake, and don't try to throw that out. We'll talk about that in a couple of weeks with our tendency toward Victorianism. But understand, this is a problem. And that's spending time together pretending to be something that you're not. Some of you do it on Sunday mornings. Really good at it on Sunday mornings. And God has no place for such pretense. And I'm going to tell you, if you attract somebody pretending to be that, you got to keep being that, or they'll get rid of you. Right? That's when they show up in my office. I didn't know I married that. She wasn't anything like that when I married her. He was never like that when we were dating. I don't know what happened to him. Right? And you got to be the bearer of bad news and say, did anything happen to him? That was all just a pretense. That's not who he was. And then marriage comes along. After the dating, pretending, and you can still pretend for a while, usually lasts about a year. And then you realize that he's just a disheveled chaos. Right? He's like, what? And then there she is, right, men, without makeup. What? Usually takes a couple of weeks before she'll let you even see her that way. No pretense here with Ruth. In fact, if you could imagine, she's saying to Boaz, I'm way less than you think of me. I don't deserve this. And there's none with Boaz either. Can you just read that account? We're given that account. We don't imagine it's all they said, but it's the heart of what they said. Is it not just refreshing to see two young people come together and have a conversation like this? A conversation of humility and generosity and graciousness. It's refreshing to me. It would be refreshing if we could talk more like that, even in our little fellowship time. Instead of, how you doing? Fine, how you doing? Fine. So Ruth says what? Why me? Why me? Verse 11, Boaz answered her, get this, all that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told to me. I know the story about how you left your father and your mother and your native land. I know the story about how you came to a people that you did not know before. May the Lord, verse 12, repay you for what you have done. And may a full reward be given you by the Lord, the God of Israel. And this is what I noticed most of all. Ruth, when you came out here today, you came out under the wings of God's providence. You were just hoping God would shelter you. And then she said, I have found grace in your eyes. And we'll end that in a minute. But notice what he says to her. You listening, young people? Listening, singles? Your reputation precedes you. Despite all your pretense in the moment, it ain't hard to find out who you really are. Now, Boaz doesn't seem to have had this extensive conversation with his servant. And his servant didn't have to have any conversation before he knew this. So the servant knew this about her because he says to Boaz, that's that girl. Boaz knows this about her. I just want you to see this. This single woman in a strange land has a reputation already. And it's the kind of reputation I wish we all had, right? She has the reputation of being the one who is recognized for what she's done for her mother-in-law. Recognize what she did for her mother-in-law in the worst of situations when she lost her husband, and then even willing to commit after she, Ruth, had lost her husband. They are aware of the incredible grace that she had shown already to that family. They're aware of the sacrifices she made. We didn't learn this until now. She left her father and mother. For all we knew, her father and mother were dead. That's why she would go with Naomi. She's just looking for a surrogate mother. Her father and mother are alive. The story is well known. And she walked away from all of that. She came to a people she didn't know. She came to this strange land. She uprooted her life. And Boaz says to her, I know you did all of that undergirded by your faith in God, because I've heard about what you said to Naomi when you said, your God will be my God. And you came out here today trusting in that God. And the least I can do, Boaz, the least I can do is be an expression of that God by extending grace to you. That's why I noticed you. And that's why I'm doing what I'm doing. And none of that says she deserves it. It all says you didn't deserve any of it. So if you're single today, wishing you were married, and I say do the next thing, let me give you an adjective to add to that. Do the faithful thing. Build a reputation while you're young of a man or a woman of God who is faithful and dependable and not selfish, but self-sacrificing, denying and adventuring and risking for somebody else. And you'll be surprised how many suitors you'll find, because that reputation will get around. Because I'm going to tell you, you stand up as a young man or woman like that in this culture, you will be noticed. I had this conversation yesterday at a tailgate thing up at Western, but we started talking about things. And I used to say to people that I would hire and that were going into the car business, and if I could, I'd hire Christians. I mean, I didn't just hire Christians. I wasn't doing anything illegal. But if I could, I'd hire Christians. And I would, as I would train those people, I would say this to them, and I would still say it today. If you're a Christian just seeking to live faithful to biblical principles and you enter the marketplace, you have an unfair advantage. You've got no competition. Nobody else sees the world like you see the world. Nobody else is motivated for the reasons you're motivated. Nobody else will imagine they're working for God and not for that jerk of a boss. Nobody else can do that. And when you stand up and walk out that way, people notice. And that's what Boaz is saying about Ruth. She's a faithful woman. And now she's being recognized for that. And she doesn't deserve it. And in the single men in the story, men, let me ask you, what are you looking for in a woman?
Well, I got my list. Got a picture.
What attracts you to a woman? Does this attract you? If you don't, if you're a Christian man and you are not attracted to this kind of a woman, I feel sorry for you. You better put this stuff on the list. What is this stuff? Loving, committed, sacrificial, hardworking, faithful woman. Guys, that's what we're looking for. You can throw the rest of that stuff away. It is not important. Is it not interesting to you that we don't know absolutely nothing about what she looks like? The Bible's not apologized. It doesn't ever apologize for pointing out beautiful men and beautiful women. We know nothing about what she looks like. But we know everything that matters about this woman, because that's the real beauty, right? Are you listening to me, men? Start now. Look for this. Sacrificing her own priorities for the good of other people. Where do you find women like that? Where do you find men like that? Willing to adventure and take a risk, right? That's this kind of woman. Unassuming, humble, not boastful. I would say to you, men and women, you're likely looking in all the wrong places and hoping you'll find the right thing. And you won't. So when the day is done, verse 14, the day is done, the day is winding down, it's mealtime. This is the afternoon meal. And at mealtime, Boaz said to her, come here and eat some bread and dip your morsel in the wine. Now, we're getting really close now. She's drinking out of the same cup, and now she's dipping in the same cup. So she's set beside the reapers. She's not too close to Boaz yet. She's beside the reapers. And he passed to her roasted grain. And she ate until she was satisfied. And I love this next part. Then she got a doggy bag. Her belly's full, but she's got some left over. You say, well, it doesn't mention a doggy bag. It will in a minute. Just trust me. She got the leftovers, wrapped it up. Then she rose to glean. It's just dinner time. It's not dark yet. There's still 3 more hours of work. She rose to glean, and Boaz instructed his young men, said, let her go. It seems here she's the only one that rose to glean. Everybody else is done for the day. Not her. Let her glean among the sheaves. Look at that. Enough of this having her pick over the leftovers. Let her go out into the field that hasn't been harvested yet. Let her go out there among the sheaves and glean. Don't stop her. Also, verse 16, look at this. Pull out some of the bundles for her. Don't make her look for this. Don't make her work for this. Leave it for her to glean. Don't rebuke her. And so she gleaned in the field until evening. And then she beat out what she had gleaned. It's well into darkness now. And then all together, it was so helpful, an ephah of barley. Now, you can read all kinds of commentaries and try to figure out what an ephah is. I've done it. It will not help. Some people say a gallon. Some people say a pile big enough to carry a dead body, that was an ephah. We don't know. Here's what I choose to say. She had a load. It's big enough to be a load at the end of the day. Do you see Boaz's influence? Do you see how when he arrived, when we met him back in verse 1, when he arrived and said, Lord bless you, and they said, Lord bless you, that wasn't just words. These are people who extend blessing to other people. This is just who they are. And clearly he's been an influence on all of his reapers. Boy, to go to work in that field, right? Just happen to show up. That God would lead you to such a place to have such a benefit of such gracious people. And don't miss the fact, this is a single man. This is a single business owner. And he understands that when you say God bless you to somebody, it should mean something. In other words, you should be saying, may God be pleased to use me to bring you a blessing today. That's really what that says. And Christians, we ought to know that. And we ought to think that way. You see, it's one thing to say, God bless you. Good luck with that back there, Julie. God bless you. And it's another thing to say, how might God use me to bring a blessing to you, Julie, today? And you know the first part is? I'm going to have to get closer to Julie, right? She's way too far away. And you've seen Ruth be invited in to the sphere of blessing. Not peculiar. She is benefiting from what every other reaper benefited from. And it's a wonderful picture to see. You see, Boaz understands that the invisible God makes himself known through his people. That's how you see him. You ever wonder how a lost world will ever see an invisible God that they hate? They'll see it in you. When you extend grace they didn't deserve, instead of constantly berating them for all the sins that are so obvious that you have thought your lack of has made you superior. That's why we have no influence almost in the world today. The Christian church is completely silenced in the public square because we're more interested in condemning people than we are being a blessing to people. You say, well, how exactly does that work? Me being God, or the grace of God for other people. Don't turn there, but you know this story. Jesus addresses this. Matthew 25, here's what he says. One day I'm coming back, and when I come back in my glory, Matthew 25, verse 31, and all the angels come with me, then I'm going to sit on my glorious throne. You got the scene? Last day. Jesus says, before him will be gathered all the nations, and he will separate the people one from another, the way the shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. So here you are. Everybody's going to be there. You're coming before God, and he's going to begin to separate the sheep from the goats. He's going to begin to divide them. He'll place the sheep on his right, and he'll place the goats on his left. And then the king, Jesus, will say to those on his right, come, you are blessed by my Father. You have inherited the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. I haven't just been working on my kingdom since I ascended. And you say, well, where are you going? I'm going to prepare a place. I've been working on this since before the foundation of the world. Imagine what God created in 6 days, and then think about what He has created now in all of the time that time has been time, just so He could say, it's time for you now. Come, blessed are you, inherit all of my labors. And you're looking and you say, what? Listen to what He says next. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me. And there you are on the right, and you're so excited about what you're going to get, and then He throws this on you. This is why you're going to get it. It's because you did all of this. And the first thing that rises to your mind, humbled by the reality of what you're about to walk into, is this. And this is the question. Then the righteous will answer Him, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you? Or thirsty and give you drink? And when did we see you a stranger and welcome you? Or naked and clothe you? And when did we see you sick or in prison and visit you? When did we do all that to you? And the king will answer them, truly I say to you, as you did it to one of the least of these my brothers, you did it to me. Oh, I see. Now in our story, we don't have to work hard to imagine who one of those people is. On the right, it's Boaz. It's not hard to imagine Boaz saying, now wait a minute, when did I feed you, Jesus? When did I give you drink? When did I provide for you that you might be clothed? I don't remember that. And Jesus will say, you did it that day when you extended grace to Ruth. You did it to me. What a powerful testimony. And what a powerful motivation for single men. Say, you know what? That needs to be what I'm about. Well, there are some on the other side, the left. And He'll look at them and say, depart from me, you cursed, into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels. I didn't prepare the fire for you. You weren't meant for that fire. I prepared the fire for the devil and his angels. They were demonic. They were the epitome of evil. But sorry, you're going too. Because I was hungry and you didn't give me food. I was thirsty and you gave me no drink. I was a stranger and you didn't welcome me. I was naked and you didn't clothe me. I was sick and in prison and you didn't visit me. And they're going to say the same thing the crowd on the right said. Wait, I didn't do that. When did I actually say, when did I see you hungry or thirsty or stranger or naked or sick or in prison and didn't minister you? When did that happen? And He says, truly I say to you, as you did not do it to one of the least of these. You did not do it to me. And those will go away into eternal punishment, but the righteous into eternal life. Boaz isn't the only one that'll stand before the Lord that day. You will. This man Boaz is kind, accepting, and mark this. Are you listening to me? I love this group here. Different nationalities, different colors, different economics. Listen to this. Boaz was not prejudiced. He had no prejudice in him. He accepted a foreign woman into his fellowship. Listen to me, friends, America. This is how you have unity. This is how you have unity. It's acceptance that moves beyond words for political points into real, honest welcoming of people into your life at expense, if necessary, to your person. No matter their race, no matter their color, no matter their culture, our message is what? You are welcome here. That's not me giving you my position on immigration policy. It has nothing to do with it. It's me giving you God's heart of the matter as it regards every other living human being. And then if you're here or in that immigration debate and you're the foreigner or you're the stranger, there's also a message in here for you. We are to be welcoming and you are to be accepting of our culture. You are to sit at our table, drink from our cup, and eat of our food. Ruth didn't sit down and say, you know what? We really don't eat at 5 back home. We don't eat till 6. She didn't say, what? No pork? This is unity. This is what it looks like. It's welcoming strangers who are glad to be welcomed into the fellowship of those of us who have invited them. We've got a real problem in our country today, and the heart of it is we don't have a clue what it means to really welcome one another. Because we don't have the heart of God on this matter. And we're always worried about what it's going to cost us. Both are necessary. You sit here, and me invite you to sit here, and you be ready to what? Sit here. Not there, sit here. You flesh all that out, but it's right here in the text. This is a beautiful example. Now, I said in verse 14, she got full and she has a doggy bag. She has leftovers. But then she's also got this load. Now, real quickly, let's finish this. Look at verse 18. I've got 1 minute. She took it up, the big load, and she went into the city. Her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. She also brought out and gave her what food she had left over. There's the doggy bag. I got this big load and I drop it down. It's well into the night. Naomi, in all likelihood, had nothing to eat. And she's thinking, great, now I got to cook supper. And Ruth says, no, you don't. They fed me, and I brought you my leftovers. She was filled, and now Naomi is filled. And her mother-in-law said to her, where'd you go? This is uncommon. This is unusual. Where did you glean today? And where have you worked? Blessed be the man who did, in fact, take notice of you. Blessed be the man who granted you favor. That's the last exchange they had before she left that morning. I'm hoping to find that guy. And so she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked, and she said, the man's name with whom I work today is Boaz. Oh my, Naomi says, verse 20, may he be blessed by the Lord, whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead. May Boaz be blessed by the Lord, whose kindness has now flowed through him. He's never forsaken who? The living or the dead. Remember the last time we heard Naomi give a pronouncement? It's back in chapter 1, verse 20. Don't call me Naomi. Call me bitter. God's forgotten all about me. Well, guess what? Her name just got changed back to Naomi. God has remembered me. God has never forgotten me. I went away full, she said in verse 21 of chapter 1, and the Lord brought me back empty. Well, that was a lie, though she was empty. She was empty when she left. She's not empty anymore. She's got dinner tonight. She's got a bag of food for however. And then more than that, verse 20, she is now aware of the principle that God established years ago that we learned last week. This man is one of our kinsmen redeemers. I mean, this man's a potential mate. That's the way mother-in-laws are, right? Or mothers are. Well, I know you liked what he did, and you liked, but have you? I'm telling you, he qualifies. That's all she's saying. He qualifies. Don't lose this. Verse 21, and Ruth said, besides all of this, he said to me, you shall keep close by my young men until they finished all my harvest. Naomi, this isn't just food for today and food for tomorrow. This is food for us until the harvest ends. What an amazing thing. What did Ruth get today? Way more than she wanted. Because that's our God. He always gives us beyond what we ever imagined. And she hasn't even realized the best thing she got yet. And that's a future husband. Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, it's good. It's good, my daughter. It's good that you go out with his young women, lest in another field you be assaulted. I mean, I don't want you to get hurt or anything. A little bit of pessimism there still. But altogether, What have we learned? God always meets your needs. He'll always give you more than you need. There's more grace than you can ever comprehend in Jesus Christ. Where sin abounds, grace abounds all the more. There is always super abounding grace for everyone who serves and loves Jesus Christ. Some of you, and maybe especially some of you singles, you worry about tomorrow. Because deep down, you're not sure you'll ever find somebody or ever again have a purpose. Some of you aren't really sure you can really trust Jesus. This story is an example for you. You can trust Him. He's way ahead of you. Ruth staggered home under a load of barley, grunting maybe. But if you had asked her, "How was your day?" she would say, "It's like any day when you live under the wings of the Almighty God." Amen? Now that's the way to find a husband or a wife, to realize that today you live under the wings of an Almighty God. Next week, we'll get them even a little closer together. It gets a little uncomfortable next week. We got women sleeping at men's feet and the whole deal. So come back next week and we'll talk some more about it. You're dismissed.